back. Welcome in to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. I'm Nick McNamara. Coming up in just about 10 minutes from now, Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggins will be in with us. But currently I'm speaking with NBAP Director of Partnership Development, Dr. Marty Vanier. We were talking a little bit about some of the features there at NBAP, but I kind of teased that I was hearing from leaders that they're also impressed about the security features there. And most recently, I actually attended the press conference after the NBAP tour where Department of Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen was there, along with a gaggle of other elected officials, I guess we could put it that way. And it's been a couple of weeks now, but how'd the tour go?
The tour was great. And you're right, it kind of was a gaggle. We, of course, had both senators. We had a couple of representatives. We had Secretary Nielsen. We had Undersecretary Bryan. And actually, Undersecretary Bryan had been out a couple of weeks before to see the facility himself, and it allowed us to prep him so he could prep the secretary. The amount of work that goes into one of these visits is unbelievably enormous. So we were really glad to get to tour day and have everything go off essentially without a hitch. Walked the secretary through on a brief tour. She wanted to meet all of the on-site staff, so we gathered for that. And then she went next door to the Biosecurity Research Institute to have some briefings there on some biosecurity type issues, and then also to understand a little more about the capabilities at K-State and how those capabilities could help support and advance the mission of NBAF.
And everyone seemed very impressed from my impression on sitting there in the press conference room.
Well, yes. Now, some of those folks, particularly the elected officials, had been through at various times earlier. And it's one thing to kind of walk through this open building with lots of concrete columns and metal and whatnot, structural steel. But to walk through it now, when we've got lots of the HEPA filter caissons installed, we've got incinerators installed, we've got wastewater treatment tanks installed, we've got the tissue digesters installed, these really ginormous pieces of equipment. And to walk through and see those things, intellectually you understand it when you talk about it, but then you see it and your brain has to work some more to wrap around it to just understand how massive those pieces of equipment are and what they are really going to be able to do once the building is open and working.
Now, I have another line of questioning to go down, but you mentioned a tissue digester.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just got to know what a tissue digester is.
Well, it provides a very important function, but it's not a very lovely function. The tissue digester is where all organic waste will go. So we're talking about animals that have been euthanized in the course of an experiment mostly. But other biological samples will go through the tissue digester. Think of it as a gigantic pressure cooker. So it's very high heat, very high pressure, very high pH. And basically its function is to dissolve all of the organic material down to, in essence, a non-structural level. So proteins are degraded. That's the most important thing. Proteins are degraded. And so that includes the animal, that includes bacteria, that includes viruses, it includes fungus. All of those things are made of protein. So it degrades all that protein. And then what comes out at the end is kind of a tarry, gooey substance that then gets carted over to the incinerators, and then it's burned. So basically then all that's left is ash.
Okay.
There you have it.
Yeah, with these types of facilities, it kind of makes sense that you have to do those sorts of things. Not every experiment is going to leave the animal intact, especially when you're dealing with, infectious diseases.
Right.
So it's kind of just a natural and maybe unfortunate reality.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but it is the reality right now.
And I think we have, we'll get to that in a moment. So you were talking a little bit about the tour there with DHS officials and elected mm-hmm. officials, and there's a number of people who mentioned the animal health corridor, which runs from mid Kansas basically all the way over to Columbus, Missouri, and so it runs over to Columbus, Missouri. And is there a lot of attention paid to NBAF sort of topping off this corridor, and how important is this corridor to NBAF as a whole?
Well, NBAF is going to be very much a central anchor to the corridor, and it's been a topic of conversation in the corridor from the beginning. And I suspect that actually having the corridor defined and understanding the statistics of the corridor was a large part in citing NBAF here. So all of the members of the corridor are going to be very excited for the opening of NBAF, and we're looking forward to developing some collaborations and partnerships with them.
And that corridor is basically the largest concentration of animal health companies in the world. Before
yes.
we continue on that, we do have a caller, so we'll get you in here. Caller, go ahead. You're on In Focus.
Good morning. Yes, I had a couple of questions. The first one is, I know that NBAF is going to be using animals. You mentioned like the waste of animals used for experiments. So my question is, how do you keep PETA from, how do you keep away from the wrath of PETA? And my second question is, unfortunately, it seems that we as human beings learn best from our mistakes. So what, and there's no 100% safe way to do anything, I guess. So what mistakes or what accidents or errors or whatever in the past, like maybe Plum Island or other facilities have happened that NBAF, I'm sure, is trying to keep from happening.
Okay. Those are both great questions. With respect to PETA and other animal rights groups, we know that they're out there. We know that NBAF is likely to become, at some point in the future, a focus of their activity. So we are, in fact, preparing for that as we look at security plans, security features, as we go through, as USDA will go through hiring activities. That's something that everyone is well aware of. I think we've been very lucky here so far in Manhattan that this community has a very deep understanding of research and biological research, and has a very deep understanding of the livestock community. So the culture here is not that amenable to the PETA philosophy. Now, that's not necessarily a 100% protection, but I think we have that going for us. And the fact that with respect to the laboratory, we're all trying to talk very openly about what's going to happen and the nature of the research. And I think that helps the community feel very comfortable with what's going on, and that assists us also. With respect to learning from our mistakes, you're exactly right. There is a group, I think I've mentioned them before, but long ago, there's a group of level 4 laboratories that have come together as kind of a coalition. It's called BSL4ZNet, BSL4 Zoonotic Disease Net. NBAF is a part of it, even though we're not open. It's an international organization, so the Canadians, the Australians, the British, the Germans, are all a part of it. CDC in Atlanta is part of it. And there are several working groups that talk at least quarterly, if not monthly. And the purpose of that group is for all of these laboratories to trade information, to talk about things that haven't gone well, to talk about things that have gone well, so that we can all learn from each other and not repeat mistakes. Clearly, over the last few decades, and you mentioned Plum Island, and that's actually a pretty good example. It's over 60 years old. There have been some problems there, and we know what those problems are, and we're able to learn from that, and the engineers and the designers understand those things and have planned around them.
All right, and I think we have, thank you for the call, by the way, and I think we have another caller on the line, and we'll take this call, and then we might have to get to a break just after that, but go ahead, caller, you're on In Focus.
Yes, with the natural physical frailties of the humans that are going to be working with these products in your lab, in the nuclear industry, we had health physics people on site. But when there was an injury in the nuclear facility, then we had to bring in the ambulance and cordon off the area for the radiation, just like you would have to do for the germs. Well, here in Manhattan, we don't even have heart event interaction. They have to fly us to Topeka. Are we going to have our first responders hardened to the considerations of what they're going to be walking into? Are they going to come from right across the street, or are you going to have on-site personnel to deal with injuries more than just an illness? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question, and that is a really important question. Those plans and procedures are being worked on right now, and I don't have a lot of details, but what I can tell you is that, yes, within the containment envelope, there will be folks who are trained to handle accidents, to handle accidental exposures. Now, there will be a lot of conversation with, and I'm sure agreements with, local first responders, so that in the event of certainly an exposure, but in the event of an accident, what will happen is that the folks inside the building who are trained will transport the patient to the containment barrier, to the edge of the envelope. They will have procedures so that the patient can be decontaminated before they leave the envelope, and then they will be handed over to the local first responders, and depending on either the nature of the injury or the nature of the exposure, then there will be protocols that will determine whether they go over to the hospital or whether they go elsewhere. And all of those things will be worked out before the labs are up and running.
Marty, I have a quick question here. We talk about the aging of the facility at Plum Island. Is there a life expectancy for the MBAF facility here?
Yes, there is. It is expected, its useful life is expected to be 50 years.
Okay, that's all.
All right, and there's so much more to talk about, but I think we're just about out of time. Dr. Vanier, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Nick. See you next month.
Of course. And coming up next, we're going to talk with Governor's Military Council Executive Director Perry Wiggins. So stay tuned for more In Focus here on News Radio KMAN.
ESV Financial, member FDIC, equal housing.